The day began to accelerate. They went to the garment distribution center and were fitted for garments. It seemed to take forever. There were no parking spaces left in the temple lot. They just kept driving around and around. It was an ugly building, Lindy thought. The gold steeple, the white stone lozenges. From a distance, a sort of third-rate wedding cake. They gave up and finally parked down below, walked up the steep hill, cutting across the grass. They started to run when Lindy realized what time it was, then stood outside panting, trying to catch their breath so as to walk in dignified. She was assigned an escort and given a bundle of temple clothing. The escort led her into a dressing room. They left her shoes on a rack just inside the door. "You're on holy ground now," the woman said. "No shoes." A woman standing guard at the stall said, "Third on your left, new bride?" And she smiled. "There now," said her escort from just outside the stall door. "Take off your clothing, please." "What should I put on?" "Just stay nude, dear," the escort said. Over the top of the stall door, Lindy watched her escort waddle away. She turned, looked at herself in the stall's mirror. Nude, she thought. What am I getting involved in? She took off her dress, hung it in the locker, smoothing it down. She removed her bra, then her panties, balling them up together and putting them on the locker's top shelf. She crossed her arms over her chest and stood there, cold, considering herself in the mirror, trying to look at ease. She rubbed her throat. Where was Rudd, she wondered. Was he nude as well? The escort came back, a pile of thick, folded fabric slung over her arm. She flopped it up and onto the stall door, and Lindy took it. It was heavy. "Put this on," said the escort. "And my underwear?" "No," she said, "just this." Lindy unfolded it. It looked like a cross between an X-ray vest and a heavy tablecloth. There was a hole in the center for her head to go through. She put it on. The escort came, led her to a room containing two odd structures, eight aluminum posts arranged in a large square with thin but opaque white curtains strung between them in the place of walls. She entered and was ritually cleansed with water, then anointed with oil, the hands of old women touching her forehead, then reaching in through the open side of Lindy's robe to wet her back, her hip, her calf, each touch startling a little burst of light. Then she was helped to step into her sacred garments and was led out. Removing the poncho, she looked at her new undergarments in the mirror. She had to wear them now, forever, always under her clothes. She looked odd, like an old lady in an old-fashioned bathing suit. She felt the sacred marks with her fingertips, the slight raised and embroidering over each breast, her belly, her knee, each mark hardly an inch long. In her wedding dress now, garments underneath, carrying under her arm the bundle, a gauzy case about the size of a pillow that held a pleated robe, a green apron with leaves embroidered on it, a sash, a veil. She was hustled toward a small booth toward the back of the dressing room, another curtain. The curtain parted and she was ushered into the booth where she was given, quote, a new name which you shall never reveal except in a place that will be shown you hereafter, unquote. What does this have to do with me, she wondered. Lips were pressed to her ear. The new name, the lips claimed, is Rachel. Never forget it, she thought. Then the curtain on the far side of the booth was parted. She found herself out of the dressing room and in a hall, an escalator ascending before her, her escort following her onto it. Up one floor and then around a curving hallway, through a door and into a chapel. A woman in white softly playing a vibrato organ. Women were to one side, men to the other. Her escort took her by the arm, guiding her along the wall to the second row. Rudd was there too, dressed all in white. A man in white near the organist stood with his arms crossed. She turned and looked behind her, row upon row of people in white, more coming in all the time, each carrying tiny slips of paper. A gathering of ghosts, she thought. The men started to peel away to the left, the women to the right, meeting in a two-person wide line at the chapel's back. What was my new name again, she wondered. Raquel? No, Rachel. And then would she have to? And when would she have to use it? Would she know? There was a line of them out the door and then to the escalator and down another curved hall, down the hall and then toward a blockade of old men in white suits who diverted the line into an endowment room. The room was like a small theater. At the front was a temple worker standing behind a marble altar that seemed illuminated from within. Temple workers to either side directed the men to the right, the women to the left. She moved down her row and sat down. She waited as everyone filed in. In the front of the room was a rich blue curtain. She could not see Rudd, though she craned her neck. The worker behind the altar stood unmoving, the doors closed behind her, the hinge clicking. The man at the altar reached down and pushed a button. A voice emanated from the ceiling somewhere. The function of the man behind the altar seemed to be to turn his head to look at the women when the disembodied voice addressed the women, to turn his head toward the men when the disembodied voice addressed the men. They were told that if any of them wanted to leave, they should do so now. Nobody left. The lights went down, and the man behind the altar lumbered to a seat just in front of the blue curtain. A screen opened up. On the screen, she could hardly sort it out. Some vague and cosmic images eventually jump-cutting back and forth with scenes from nature. From the ceiling came voices rendered echoic and hollow, supposedly God and Jesus and the archangel Michael. "I will go down," Michael said, and by doing so became Adam, the father of all. Lights on, off, Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, bushes and branches conveniently placed to hide their privates. The appearance of the devil, identified by his dark beard. It's a passion play, she thought. Eve was given the fruit and ate of it. "Adam," God called out. "Adam, where art thou?" There was a rustling in the bushes. Adam appeared. "I heard thy voice and hid myself because I was naked. Who told thee that thou wast naked? Hast thou partaken of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, of which we commanded thee not to partake? The woman thou gavest me, and commanded that she should remain with me, she gave me of the fruit of the tree, and I did eat." The lights came on, and Lindy was taught what they called a sign and a token, and was made to open her bundle and put on the apron that represented the apron of fig leaves Adam and Eve had made to cover their nakedness. "But I'm not naked," Lindy thought. The movie came on again. Adam and Eve wandered the lone and dreary world, God appearing as a floating, glowing, venerably bearded old man. God kept sending people down to earth to provide Adam further light and knowledge. Each visit, she was made to put on more clothing or to rearrange the clothing she already had on. She took off the apron, put on a gauzy robe, a veil, a sash, and then put the apron on again. She moved the robe from left shoulder to right. She was given tokens and signs, certain handshakes and gestures, the sign of the nail, the sure sign of the nail, and with each received also a certain name. She was being shown, the disembodied voice told her, the signs and tokens that she would have to use in the afterlife, presenting them in proper sequence and order to those angels who stood as sentinels along the path to heaven.